As we said, the gospel kind of has to be, our marriages kind of have to begin here, like the gospel does, that I'm screwed up and I want to grow and change. And we talked about four abilities that we need, and we were talking about intimacy just a minute ago, and also mutuality. So the last thing we're going to talk about here this morning is, in a sense, identity. Can I be me and can you be you? And can we work that out? In other words, how do we make sense of being two different people together? How do I make sense of me being me and you being you? And there's a lot of directions we could go with that. But what I want to do this morning is I want to focus, regarding your marriage, on the issue of conflict and the potential of fighting. Because if I am me and you are you, we are going to have conflict. Because, you know, if you two are exactly the same, then one of you is unnecessary. Okay? So, point number one, conflict is not bad. Codependent pleasers, right? Conflict happens when you have two people together in a relationship, both of whom have brains, all right? Billion-dollar government grants have revealed the following. Relationships are always more difficult when they have two people in them, all right? That's your tax dollars at work right there, ladies and gentlemen. So, legitimate conflict is how two people basically make sense of not being the same person, okay? And those couples who say, ooh, we never fight, take a look at that. Something's missing there, okay? One of you is too compliant. Both of you are too nice. I don't know. Somehow that's going to come back to bite you. I had a guy in my office a while back, and he had fallen in love. This was the one. She's perfect. It's like all we do is we talk, and we end up talking so long and so late, and we're just alike, and we just have so much fun together. And I think she's the one. I mean, how can I know? And I said, well, that's easy. Pick a fight with her. He said, what? We don't fight. We have nothing to fight about. I said, then you don't know her. Find something to fight about. Until you fight her, you will not really know who she is. Like the Seraph says to Neo in The Matrix 2, how can you truly know someone until you fight them? That is true. If I'm going to bring real me into the relationship, there's going to be conflict. So conflict's not really the problem. We can talk about that. That's not the real plot twist. The plot twist is this. You have a disagreement, and they're not getting you, or they're not letting you matter again, or you walk into the bedroom and they left their clothes on the floor again. You know those things? Norma cleans up behind me, like right behind me. Like I like to cook, and I'll like cut an onion and put the knife on the chopping block to go get a bell pepper, and I'll turn around, the knife is clean and in the knife block. I'm like, where'd my knife go? You know, I tease her that when I get up to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, I come back and she's made up my side of the bed. I'm like, look, just back off. Okay, you know those things. Or you need them emotionally and they blow you off, or you need them sexually and they blow you off, or they tell you how to drive, you know, the marriage killer. Anyway, but instead of working through these problems, instead of asking for what you need in an adult way, instead you snap. And you jab, and you say, you know what, I'm really sick of this. Or as a woman in my office this week said, oh my gosh, you really are like my dad, all right? Or we say, we're going to do this again, and your anger turns to your hurt turns to anger, or your fear turns to anger. Anger is usually a way to hide a more vulnerable feeling. We get angry to protect ourselves, so we hurt them, and we attack them. And we say that thing we've always been wanting to say, and what was once a conflict is now a fight. Okay, so point one, conflict, good. Point two, fight, not good. Okay, so far so good? All right, conflicts and fights are different things. Now, it's fights I want to focus on primarily and first, because if a conflict can stay a conflict, a couple of people disagreeing with one another, we can solve that. We got a problem, we can fix it, no big, okay? But once it becomes a fight, you're not trying to solve anything anymore, Cinderella, okay? What are you trying to do in a fight? You're just hurt and you're angry and you're trying to win. And by the way, old Mr. Problem, the one who you really actually need to solve as you're fighting, he's sitting over here all by himself. Nobody's even paying any attention to him, you know, and that's why you've been having the same fight since college, because you never fix it, okay? So today I want to deconstruct fighting primarily, and conflict too. They are by definition these flowing complex dances full of all this emotional reactivity. And I want to give you some real frontal lobe tools for how to deal with that, which is, means I'm going to try to get really practical. This is going to be the most practical of our talks. I want you to have something to take with you, something you can do differently this week. I'm literally going to give you five steps, okay? But with practical, there is the danger of coming across oversimplified. This isn't miracle cure. This isn't raise up your spouse in the way that she should go, and when she is old, she will not depart from it. That's not what we're talking about here. But I do want to give you some principles, and when I'm giving them to you, something you're going to go, yeah, but what about so-and-so? And I want you to do that, because then we can come back in Q&A and put more meat on the bones. Got our plan? Okay. Also, I'm assuming this whole weekend, and certainly in this talk, that you are both repentant. In other words, you're both willing to say, yeah, we're fighting and we're in conflict and I want to stop, as opposed to that person who's saying, I don't care about all that psychobabble. I'll yell at you if I want to. Okay, that's a whole different talk. I will address that some here this morning, but there's a science to dealing with those people, as we alluded to last night. We can talk about it more if you want. But we're going to start assuming that you're both repentant. So here's what we're going to do. Number one, what do we do with the fight? How do we defuse the bomb once it's gone off? In other words, how do we put Humpty Dumpty back together again, okay? Number two, how do we understand the fight? How do we get perspective on what is going on? If you don't understand what is happening in your fight, it will just keep going and going and going like the Terminator, down to his metal alloy hypo inner skeleton still coming after you, okay? We need to understand the dynamics of what's happening. We're going to have to figure out how to address the hurt that you create, because once you're fighting, you're going to hurt one another, and we've got to have to go back and fix that, or it ain't going to go away. And finally, we're going to talk about how to resolve the original conflict. In other words, the problem that started this whole thing in the first place. Okay? So that's all we're going to do. easy peas, right? So first rule of Fight Club is we got to talk about Fight Club. Let's get started, all right? Number one, what's the first thing to do when the fight bomb hits? In other words, you realize it's escalated. You realize the room's gotten icy. You realize you're saying what you always wanted to say and things are getting mean. Step one is I want you to go to timeout. Super underused. You put your kids in timeout, right? It's all in the book. A lot of stuff on timeout. Put yourself in timeout, okay? In other words, what that means is somebody says, whoa, 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 this is getting ugly. We need to stop. Or that was really hurtful. I think I need to not talk to you right now if you're going to be hurtful. Or, whoa, we're losing control here, okay? In other words, when you feel that adrenaline rush hit and you realize you're angry and you want to make your point with your finger, when you realize you're really triggered, it's like a woman in my office the other day, her husband said something and she just did this. She turned her head, she goes, and I'm like, run, dude, go, go. I'll hold her off. It's like, God, it was so scary. Anyway, it was so slow. It was like, Anyway, when you feel that jolt, when you feel like things are about to get ugly, the first thing to do is not do what comes naturally, okay? In other words, when we encounter hostility and frustration, what happens in our brains is that we get triggered back here in that reptile brain, that caveman brain, that midbrain, hypothalamus, amygdala, whatever like that. This basically fight, flight, or freeze. You know, it's your caveman brain. Your options are kind of fight T-Rex or run from him. That's your level of sophistication, okay? So we get silent or we criticize or we nag or we withdraw or we do silent treatment, you know, tools of the trade in a fight, right? In order to see which one of us is going to win and which one of us is going to lose and which one is going to be right and which one is going to be the bad guy and make you get it. Sound familiar, right? Regular crowd. In other words, we do the same things to our spouse from our caveman brain that we do to a Coke machine when it doesn't give us a Coke. Okay? So you put some money in a Coke machine, what happens? Coke drops out. Good. I like to ask some questions I know you know the answers to. Kind of self-esteem builders, you know, like that. It's good. Okay. All right, but you put money in a Coke machine and no Coke comes out. What do? You start banging on it. You're shaking it. You know, you take down the 800 number and call the company. You kick it. You do George Costanza, you know. What was the candy bar he wanted? Yeah. What? It was Twix. The candy crunch, the delicious candy, whatever. Y'all remember it. All right. You go like this, whatever. But you get more aggressive. And we call that a fight, and that's a lot of fun till 1:30 in the morning. But there's a couple of problems with a fight. Problems that timeout is going to help us stop. Number one, timeout is going to help us stop the hurtfulness that fights create. Okay? When you fight, you say things you don't mean, you strike out. When you're triggered in caveman brain, it's law of the jungle, eat what you kill, win at all costs. And that part of us is destructive and needs to be stopped. Okay? In other words, timeout's like setting limits on a child. That child part of us, that little square from last night, remember? That little guy wants to be mean, and we got to set some limits on him. The four people in every marriage part. Okay? By the way, while we're here, let's go ahead and answer the age-old question. Is what you say when you're really angry what you really mean? You know? You get in a fight, and your spouse is like, well, I never even wanted kids anyway. And you're like, whoa, you know? Is this what they've been hiding all along? No, this... What you say when you're escalated like that is not what you really believe. It's just what a five-year-old would really believe. Children are ultimate and absolute and black and white, and everybody hates me. Nobody likes me. I wish I'd never married you. Ultimate, okay? In other words, that's child thinking. That's not what they really feel. It's just the most primitive part of us. And that part needs to have limits set on him, okay? And we need time out to do that. So first reason for timeout is that people get hurt by cavemen and cave girls, and we need to stop that hurt, okay? Second reason that timeout is good is because the goal of a fight is wrong. What's the goal of a fight? To win. Right. In other words, you say, the goal of a conflict is I say X, you say Y, let's figure this out. The goal of a fight is to win and be right. Now, pardon me, but that's a terrible goal. I don't want to be insensitive or anything, but the best case scenario here is you win, and now you're married to a loser, okay? And the loser ain't very happy, and the loser's going to come back and bite you, okay? I mean, think about it. How many win-lose relationships do you know of in the universe that last very long? So you go to Starbucks, and they're charging $19.75 for a cappuccino. Win for them, lose for me, no thanks. You go into Starbucks and start stealing those cool little coffee cups they have on the shelves. Win for you, lose for them, that won't work very long either. Win-lose relationships don't work. But what I see couples do chronically is when they encounter a problem, it becomes a win-lose, all right? So timeout is at least going to stop that direction. Playground principle is hitting the kid with the ball on the playground might get you the ball, but it won't get you anybody to throw it with, okay? So we got to time out. If you don't know what to do good, just don't do the bad. One time, Norma had led me on what turned out to be a real wild goose chase, and I'd taken time off work, gone to this place she sent me, and obviously the store had moved. And so I called her and I said, they're not here. Did they move or something? And she's like, I'd driven way off. She's like, oh, God, yeah, they did move. I'm sorry. Now, you know me by now. I wanted to, like, call her all sorts of names and go off. Like, what are you thinking? Blah, blah, blah. But I stopped myself and I said, okay, I'm about to say all sorts of, like, really ugly things and be a jerk. And I don't want to do that, but I don't really know what, like, the good thing to do here yet is. And she goes, okay, that's fine. Let's hang up and call one of your nice friends and get them to tell you, you know, what you should say. And I'm like, okay. In other words, I didn't know at that point what I should do. I just wanted to yell at her. But I knew I needed to stop the yell. Okay? Now, you can call timeout on yourself. Golf, not tennis, remember? I wrote an adolescent conference a few years back. Parenting conferences are easy, but I'd never done an adolescence conference before. And it was really hard to write. I couldn't figure out exactly how to do it. And one day, I figured it out. I was up in my man cave. Boom, got it. This is how I'm going to do it. So I go running down the stairs to Norma. You're not going to believe it. Figured it out at the adolescence conference. Got it. And she goes, oh, good. And goes back to her phone. All right, little square guy me is like, oh, well, thank you for being so supportive of your husband. You know, and I'm feeling all this stuff start rising up. Now, he goes to time out. I'm like, dude, just go to your man cave and figure this out. So I go to my man cave. Whatever I'm going to do, I got to go to time out. I'm about to be ugly to her. Okay, this is way underused. So in time out, I started thinking, well, what do I need? And I thought, well, I guess I need to know if she cares about my conference, don't I, if you get down to brass tacks. So I went down and I asked her, are you excited about my conference? She goes, oh my gosh, yes. I said, okay, well, you seemed really nonplussed when I told you about it. And she said, well, I just gotten off the phone with my mother. I remember her mother sick. And I'm like, ah, you mean everything in the world's not about me? Okay. This is blowing my mind, man, you know? Now, let me get real honest with you here. You're not going to want to go to timeout. In other words, if you're like me, it feels good to be a jerk. Tell me I'm not the only one.
Amen.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like making my point with my finger in her face. You know, I want to be mean at that point. I don't want her to get away with it. And let me tell you something that's going to happen if you go to timeout. It's going to feel bad to you. And the reason it feels good to be mean when we're angry is because it literally takes some of our own internal anger and shame and meanness and cruelty and dumps it on somebody else. It's like I have 10 pennies worth of meanness inside of me. And if I can dump them on you, I dump 8 of them on you. I only got 2 pennies left. I feel a lot better. You're the awful bad one. I'm the good one. Now, unfortunately, I'm still making pennies in here. I got the Denver Mint living in here. But for a minute, I can make you feel bad and I feel good. And that's one of the reasons it's hard to let go of an injury. And it's one of the reasons it feels good to hurt people. Because I literally, if you can play with the parable, the analogy, I am depositing some of my yuck onto you. And if you have ears to hear it, it'll make me feel better and you feel worse. And sometimes entire marriages are based on that principle, okay? So we need to set limits on that part of us. Or have somebody in our lives do it for us. I want you, if you're a jerk in your marriage like I am, I want you to teach your spouse, when I treat you that way, I want you to walk out of the room. Do not let me do that, okay? That is not only protective of them, it's life-giving to you. More on that in a minute. Well, more on that right now. Secondly, you can catch your spouse and do time out. In other words, Norma will say to me, did you mean that to be hurtful? Because we were just having a good conversation, and that felt like you wanted to hurt me. Are you wanting to hurt me? Because I'm willing to have a conversation with you, but if you want to hurt me, I think I need a time out and not do this. And suddenly, I'm given a very interesting choice. It's a great limit. A good limit is always a rule about me. She's not saying, quit being a jerk. She's saying, if you're being mean, I don't think I want to talk. A good limit doesn't say, quit drinking so much. A good limit says, I don't talk to inebriated people. But it is your responsibility, if you are being hurt by your spouse, to learn to lovingly set powerful limits on them. And if you are a jerk, I think it's a really repentant thing for you to do, to teach them how to do that, okay? I have so many spouses who come in and their spouse walks in the door and goes, what are you thinking parking like that? Okay? And they're Chicken Little, so they're like, well, I thought maybe like you wanted to get the garbage out later on. And then they wonder why they're mistreated in their marriage. I want the victim spouse to say, whoa, somebody's coming in with a bee up their parking lot bonnet. I don't think I'm going to have any conversation that starts like that, Cochise. All right? In other words, think about it. First question God asks when he meets somebody is, are they repentant or not? What do repentant people need? Love, restoration, kindness, healing, patience, love. You get the drift. What do unrepentant people need? They need to become repentant people. And if you read the Bible, that happens by setting limits on them. If you read psychology, that happens by setting limits on them. In other words, our out-of-control behavior will never grow until it meets limits in the context of love. I love you, but I can't let you talk to me like that. It's the only way that person grows. It's the only way to help a marriage with an oppressor and an oppressed, okay? I'll have clients a lot of times who go, you're not going to believe. Last night, she just stood there and yelled at me for 4 hours. And I'll always, like, look at their feet. And they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I was making sure you had feet because I'm wondering why you sat there for 4 hours and let her yell at you, okay? In other words, you can set limits on your spouse when they're being jerks. This is way underused. Like I say, that's a whole conference. All right, third reason timeout is helpful is because it gives us a chance to think. This is the fourth eye again, remember? Can I think and not just react? The only thing that's going to ever work us out of a fight is for us to put our heads together and figure out what's going on. You know, frontal lobes, people, executive functioning. We're smart up here. We're dumb back here. Okay, so timeout buys us that time, usually 20 minutes physiologically for all that adrenaline to sort of slow down. Timeout's going to buy us that time. What do I need? You know, when Obi-Wan says to Luke, Luke, trust your feelings, all right? Obi-Wan is wrong, all right? Trust your feelings, for crying out loud, that'll never work. That's why I lived alone on Tatooine. I mean, you can't maintain a relationship with a woman thinking like that. Are you kidding me? Trust your feelings? No. You're going to have to think in order to get out of these problems. Timeout is not timeout jerk face. I don't have anything to do with you. Timeout is not silent treatment. You know, 12 days later, it's like, what? I'm just having a timeout. Okay? I had one woman tell me, once after a conference, she said, I'm never going to use timeout. It'll just give him a chance to escape. He'll go, oh, yeah, okay, babe, timeout. You know, like 12 hours later, he's still at the 19th hole. It's like, no, I just need a little more timeout. You know, okay. You do have to reengage, you know, 30 minutes. That's all, you know, take a little time. Just let it settle down and then we can come back. All right. All right. So next step after a timeout is go bird's eye. What I mean by that is, as we said earlier, secret of the universe regarding marriages is that they problems in a marriage are not cause and effect. They are cyclical. They are dances. And one of the most powerful things we can do in a conflict or a fight is to learn our dances. In other words, I do A, you do B, we keep doing this thing. I get hurt by this when you say that, and then I strike back. And I call that going bird's eye, going fly on a wall, kind of learning to develop perspective on what's going on. One of the reasons that therapy is a valuable thing for couples, even if your therapist is a total knucklehead, is it's good to have somebody who can stand out of your system and look at what y'all are doing. And I know couples are ready to end therapy when I see them doing that themselves. They say, ooh, last night I walked in the door and I knew I was already angry and she read it on my face. And so she started getting so-and-so and I knew the next thing that was going to happen was that I, and they're telling me about what is going to happen in their marriage. Once you can do that, you can graduate from therapy. I call that going bird's eye. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. Norman and I, when the kids were little, we used to have what we came to call the whose day is worse fight. And we routinely had it. I would come in from a hard day of work, sort of assuming that I had a bad day posture with my coat and my computer case. And I'd say, hey, as if to say, you really ought to appreciate how hard I worked today providing for our family. Okay. Problem is that the source of my adoration over there is blankly slumped over the stove cooking something I don't want for dinner. And her response is, yeah, hey, would you set the table? As if to say, welcome home from your 8-hour vacation. All right. Now, I don't know about her, but I've been helping people all day. This is tough. This is a rough world, okay? There's a lot of pain out there. All she's been doing is driving around in a minivan, okay? And she's like, well, at least you get meaningful adult conversation. You change people's lives. I sat in the sick room of the pediatricians all day. You know, and the repeat fight is, who's going to be more pitiful and get appreciated as much as they deserve? You know what I'm talking about, right? All right. So bird's eye is the ability to go, hey, Sherlock, we're doing that thing again. You know that thing where we're trying to out-pitiful each other and you don't feel like I appreciate you and blah, 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 blah. Hey, want to learn to quit doing that? In other words, we've done it enough. Once Norm and I time out, we ought to be able to back up and look at this. We ought to be able to describe it since we do it all the time, okay? So bird's eye is that ability to sort of, instead of just doing the same fight for the rest of your life like the Energizer Bunny, somebody backs up and gets in that line judge chair off the tennis court and starts looking at what's going on, okay? I think that you criticize me for undermining you with the children, which makes me angry, which actually makes me pull further away from you. And actually, I do think I then end up undermining you with the children more. We're doing that thing again, okay? Now, if you don't have the ability to go that objective, that's a great sign to get objective eyes. One of your body of Christ people, a pastor, a therapist, whatever. But if you find yourself stuck in fights, you're going to have to get somebody who can back out of that system and look at it. Somebody called this doing a conflict post-mortem. In other words, after the fight, you have the second discussion about the fight. Yeah, well, when you said that, I think it made me feel so-and-so, which then made you feel so-and-so. And yeah, I know, exactly, and that made me feel stupid, and that's why I said that. Conflict post-mortem. Great way to hedge your bets about the next time this happens, because it is going to happen again. You will be there again. As Yoda says, you will be. You will be. So, one bird's eye question is, what are we doing? What's our dance? The next bird's eye question is, what's going on in me? This one's gold. Getting a little perspective on you. You know that sense when a fight's gotten way bigger than it ought to be? Or that your reaction has gotten way bigger than it ought to be? Where 2 + 2 is equaling 7? I want to invite you to start reflecting on, where's that extra 4 coming from? Okay? Maybe it's a way you've wounded me in the past and never resolved it. Or maybe it's a chronic way in which you've hurt me and you, no matter how many times I've asked you to stop. Maybe it's childhood issues. Maybe it's my own wounds that are getting brought into the relationship and my own little inner kid or my inner Godzilla is now running the marriage, you know? I call these legacy hurts. In other words, this hurt or injury that I have, and it sort of sits in the background until we're, you know, talking about the in-laws, and then boom, you know, Hiroshima, and you're like, where did that come from, right? As Anchorman says, that escalated quickly. I killed a man with a trident. Norma wrote a book years ago on Camp DeSoto. I bet a lot of y'all know Camp DeSoto. And she asked me to edit a chapter of it once, and I got it, edited it, got a hard copy, and spent some time really looking at it and made some comments, and I brought it back to her and I said, here's your chapter. I took a look at it. And she goes, oh, thanks. And she goes back to working. And I feel this anger start to rise in me. Like, oh, thanks. All right. She sees it on my face. So I time out because I'm about to be a jerk. And I start thinking, what is the deal here? And I realized what it was. It was a childhood thing for me. See, I was this kid who, what I wanted to do was make good grades or be a good little boy, and I wanted my parents to, like, go, oh my gosh, John, you're amazing. Thank you. We're so proud of you. Okay? So what I was wanting was a parent issue. Like, I'm still waiting on them to sort of light the incense and have the, you know, celebration of John, you know, still waiting on that. So Norma kind of goes, yeah, thanks, and not the celebration. And she's like, is something wrong? And I said, yeah, but it has nothing to do with you, I'm realizing. Okay? Bird's eye on yourself. What is going on with me? What hooked me there? Okay? Again, if you can't do that, then we need to externalize. Thirdly, third step, we got to address the hurt. Because once you're fighting, you're going to hurt each other. One of the key differences between a conflict and a fight is that in fights, people get hurt, and we got to fix that, or we're never going to be able to move on. Let me ask you, this is a hard question. Take a shot at it. What does it mean that you hurt me? What does hurt mean? Can y'all put words on that? It's tough, isn't it? The best I can figure is it's sort of the diminishment, the you make me less than. You wound me usually by shame or betrayal or criticism. In other words, hurt comes from things like, I can't believe how stupid you are. You feel the hurt that that would create? Or how about, you know, the husband walks in from work and he goes, this place looks like a bomb went off. What have you been doing all day? You feel the diminishment? That's one of the best words I can find for it is diminishment. Hurt says you've taken something from me, something about my dignity, something about my heart, okay? I feel less than because of you. That is hurt. Now, secret of the universe about making sense of conflicts ending good is this. The reason that we have problems is not communication skills or I don't know your love language. The reason we ultimately have problems resolving conflict is that most humans do not know how to resolve hurt once we have caused it. We don't know how. We don't know how to make it better. And that's a real problem, because unless you address the hurt that's now existing in this fight, you ain't going nowhere, boy. Okay? In fact, you know, the issue ain't the in-laws or the finances anymore. The issue is now the hurt. What used to be one problem is now two problems, actually three problems. There's the original conflict, and now you're fighting about it, and now you got a whole lot of hurt to solve. So you're going down the wrong trail here. Now all I care about is making you get it, or stopping you from hurting me, or pushing back harder than you're pushing. And guess what? That's exactly what your spouse is doing, and that's why a fight is a fight. Two people going back and forth and back and forth trying to deal with that conflict and that hurt. And again, remember, poor old Mr. Problem, he's still sitting over here all by himself, and nobody's, we forgot about him 30 minutes ago, all right? So if we're ever going to resolve any of this, much less Mr. Original Problem, we've got to address the hurt first. Let me ask you again, what is it that you need from someone when you have been hurt? What would help your hurt? Acknowledgement. Good. Anybody else? Understanding. Acknowledgement. Hearing. Secret of the Universe, number 41. The only thing that makes hurt feel better is when somebody hears it and gets it and tries on, or at least tries to understand how it felt to you. It's the only cure. The only thing that makes hurt get better is if somebody's willing to try to get it, to see some validity to it. In fact, that's where we get the term, the psychobabble term, validation. In other words, I can see the validity of why you are hurting. Now, this is not complicated, this getting understood piece. We do it all the time in real life. Some guy cuts you off on the interstate, and you go, oh my gosh, what an idiot. But then you see him look in his rearview mirror, and he kind of waves like that. And it's all okay then, right? It's like, okay, he knows he's an idiot. It's like, yeah, you know, hey, man, you know, well, that's what I'm talking about. You know how that changes the dynamic? All of a sudden, this person's kind of acknowledging it. So, ladies and gentlemen, what we need is a rearview mirror wave in your marriages, okay? In other words, what would it look like to be able to acknowledge with your spouse that we're at least willing to try to get it? Now, this does not mean that we are agreeing with them. Though there is a grain of truth in everything your spouse says about you, I hate to tell you. But we're not throwing the match here. We're not taking a dive in the fifth, okay? We're basically just going to say, I'm going to try it on and try to get it. So I'll tell you a story. Norma needed a new doctor years back, and her doctor was retiring. And I said, oh, you need to see Dr. Whitney. She's one of my favorites. I part with in the doctor's parking. She's cool, and she's young, and she's like, super great. And anyway, Norma calls, finds out it's like a year and a half to get in to see her. And I said, well, I see her all the time in the parking lot. We partner each other. I'll just ask her. And so like 2 weeks goes by and I never see Dr. Whitney. So Norma's like, I really need refills on meds and stuff like that. And I don't have a doctor. I mean, I need this. And I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to get up early, get a power bar and a glass of orange juice. And I'm going to get there to the parking garage early and I'm going to stalk her. And I will sit and listen to the radio or something, and when Dr. Whitney shows up, I'll catch her, I'll catch her. So I get there early, I sit there about 20, 30 minutes, and Dr. Whitney pulls up. I get out, I'm like, ah, funny seeing you here, just like coincidence, you know, I needed to ask you. So I said, would you see my wife? She goes, yeah. She says, tell Norma to call so-and-so, and Norma gets in the next week. Great, right? So Norma and I go out to eat the night of her doctor's appointment, and I said, oh, by the way, you saw Dr. Whitney today, how'd it go? And she goes, oh, my gosh, she was wonderful. And she thought that was so cute about you stalking her in the parking garage. Can you say, I need a timeout? I was humiliated. And literally in the restaurant, I said, I need to go to the, you know, gents. I red-faced, like, I was really upset. Anyway, Norma kind of got it. She's like, what? She thought it was cute, you know? And I'm like, so you know, the next week I'm like hiding from Dr. Whitney. It's like, oh my gosh, there she is. It's like, you know, and I realized this is haunting me and it's feeling bad. And so I realized I really needed something from Norma about this. Norma just kept blowing it off. And so finally I sat down and I said, Norma, I really need you to get this because I'm hiding from Dr. Whitney. I'm humiliated. I'm angry at you. And she said, okay. And she stopped everything. She slowed down and she said, tell me. And I said, I felt so humiliated. I said, I'm a colleague of Dr. Whitney's. And frankly, you know, I don't want her to think of me as the stalker husband who's so cute and hid to get his wife an appointment with her. I want her to think of me as like cool Dr. Cox who works at the same hospital as her. And that really put me in a position of kind of, I was doing you this favor and it felt like throwing me under the bus and I felt humiliated by it. And Norma slows down and she goes, oh my gosh, I get it. Like, you felt stupid. Like, I made you look like a fool waiting in the car. And I said, yes. Okay? That's when you know you're getting your spouse. Yes, that. That's what we're shooting for. Okay? And after that moment, I was able to let that injury go. Now, that's dandy and all, but why might we resist doing what Norma did? Well, because when we really hear someone and own the way in which we have hurt them, we get really close, right on the edge of kind of agreeing that, yeah, I am the bad guy. And none of us are going to do that. And we shouldn't, because that's not the whole truth. In other words, so far in this Dr. Whitney story, we've only heard half the story, my side. And if that's where we stop, we're never going to go anywhere. So before we leave this topic, Norma's got to have a turn. In other words, most fights are people fighting to be heard. That's so humiliating. Well, you don't think I was humiliated? Well, that's not what I'm... And you're back and forth saying which one of us gets to matter. Well, we're going to solve that today with using a very, very sophisticated psychological technique. After years and years of graduate school and study, we're going to take turns, okay? In other words, after I talk about Dr. Whitney, Norma gets a turn. You're going to get a turn. Sometimes after a fight, she and I, when we see we're in conflict, we'll go, okay, wait. You want to go first? I went first last time. Okay? Now, that person gets to speak without you defending yourself, without you going, yeah, but, until they had that experience I did. Yes, thank you. That's it. That's how it felt to me. And then you will get a turn, I promise you. After I'm finished with being heard about Dr. Whitney, I get to say, I ought to say to Norma, she could say, can I have a turn now? You got need anything else? Can I kind of tell my side? Or better yet, for me to go, would you like a turn? Do you need something? Which she'll say, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. And what she said was, I think you really gave me way too much power here. And then kind of bashed me for it. I would like for you to own some of your own shaminess and grandiosity here, because you want Dr. Whitney to think you're amazing and cool, and I told a story that made you look really uncool, and then you're mad at me for it. I mean, can you own some of the fact that this was some of your own pride? And I'm like, well, A, that's kind of true. I did want her to think I was really cool, and this made me look not cool. Good shot, Norma. That was true. I need to own that. Number two, I need to own it regardless, because it's what it feels like to her, that I'm kind of bashing her. We both get to be heard here, is my point. You see it? And you can only do that by taking turns. Now, this will take some practice, but you learn the old way, you can learn this one, okay? Hearing heals hurt. Nobody's going to ever be able to let something go until they're hurt. I actually like hearing you and getting it more than I like I'm sorry. That's another show. All right, final step. You've done your timeout. You've done your bird's eyeing. You've done some listening and getting it. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is you still hadn't solved the problem. You know, the one that started this in the first place? So here's the target. We said every fight is hopeless because it's a win-lose, right? Well, no problem, no conflict is ever going to get resolved until we create a win-win. You got to both matter. We've got to come up with a way of addressing your problem in which both of what you need is taken into account. You can't bully your way. You can't nag your way. You can't silent treatment your way. You can't play the submission card, the one that says tie goes to the husband. You know, you got to both matter. In fact, we could call this matter, matter. With healthy relationships, that's what we're shooting for, is mutuality, not winning. What that means is what your spouse wants in this story has got to matter somehow in the solution. Whether you like it or whether you hate it or whether you despise it, somehow it's got to matter. What you want, one of the things that you were saying when you said, I do, was, do you agree that your own wishes will no longer be the only factor in your decisions? I do. Okay, you said that. Good news is your spouse did too. But our family used to have an annual fight regarding Christmas card pictures. Y'all do Christmas card pictures of your kids, you know? Now, we had three girls, which means we'd take, you know, 800-900 photographs. And then they would go through them, especially as they got a little bit older. And invariably, they would, you know, never be able to decide on a picture that they all were happy with. You know, two of them would like it, and the other one would be, no, my hair's like poofy, you know, and so we'd have to throw that one out. So anyway, one year they were especially stuck, and they couldn't find any picture that they agreed on, and I said, okay, here's the deal. You guys either need to find a picture you agree on, or fate worse than death, we're going to pick the picture, okay? So they all worked together and picked a picture, and actually, it wasn't the best of the pictures. It was just one that they all kind of were willing to accept. And so Callie, the oldest, at that point said, oh, I get it. So compromise is where everybody's equally unhappy. In other words, if I got my pick, at least one person in the house would be happy. At this rate, we are all mutually unhappy. She is now a therapist in Nashville. No surprise there, okay? So my clients love this. It's like, oh, golly, doc, thanks. Now we're both unhappy. You know, that's your goal in marriage, is for both of you to be unhappy. Anyway, but win-win or lose-lose or matter-matter, however we say it, is not a solution. It's more of a covenant. It's more of a commitment I want you to try on together. It's a commitment that says, in essence, I am committed to not just taking what I want and leaving you out in the cold. See, the reason that we fight is because we're scared. I'm scared if I don't fight you to get what I want, if I don't escalate or manipulate or control to get what I want, you're just going to take what you want and under the bus I go. So guess what? I'm going to stand my ground. Win-win says, honey, let's make a commitment. When we run into problems like this, I want to commit to you that I am never just going to say, you want to add on the house, and I say no, and we're just not. Okay? Win says, you know, if you want Chinese and I want Mexican. Win lose says, well, how can I win and get my mooshu pork? Okay? Win-win says, we're going to work this out. We'll go get Mexican and get Chinese takeout on the way home. You know, we'll go to Chili's and get a Southwestern egg roll. We'll do whatever we need. We're going to both matter here, okay? And you're on the same team. Core to your heart is that you feel threatened that you're going to get taken from and your spouse is going to be the one who does it. That's going to make you escalate, be more angry, be more controlling, and hence you're going to get the fight. Way back here, down in the bottom of this solution panel, is win-win, where you say to one another, like the Marines, nobody's going to be left behind. I saw a couple a while back, and he wanted to quit his job and go to med school. She wanted to quit her job and have babies. Okay? Welcome to the every marriage I know. So what does his do in his dream do to her dream? Boom. What does her do in her dream do to his dream? Boom. And they both knew it. If he goes to med school, I got to keep working, no babies. If she stops and has babies, can't go to med school. And they both saw this win-lose, and it scared them. And they started fighting about it. And they were in conflict about it all the time. And they started resenting each other about it all the time, scared that the other was going to win. We started talking about win-win together and just backing off this adversarial thing. And it was funny, they started getting real creative. They started kind of brainstorming together. You'd be amazed at the solutions you can come up with when you stop fighting. He started thinking, well, you know, I'm not even sure I want to be a full-on doctor. Maybe I could go to nurse prac school, and I can do that part-time. And she thought, yeah, you know what? There's some family investments I have. I think if we tweak those and did this, then maybe one of us could work. And they started getting creative with this jigsaw puzzle of how they could solve this problem together once you stop fighting, okay? So you think I'm too hard on the kids. I think you're too soft. Let's get some help. Let's buy a parenting book. Let's get a counselor. Let's break the tie. You think that we're, you want to talk about the issue right now tonight? I'm too sleepy. If you agree to wait till tomorrow, I agree to be the one to initiate it. I have a couple right now, and they've just built a house, and she wants to sell it immediately. And he's like, we just built this house, and they are stuck. They will not budge in any way. Which you will run into some. How do you do a win-win there? Well, what I've invited them to do is if you're that recalcitrant, you're that immovable, I want you to start asking a little square question. In other words, why am I so committed to this? What is hooking me about this? Why am I so unwilling to budge? What is this meaning to me? In other words, if you get that stuck in a win-lose, there's a reason. Now, to this woman's credit, she was able to access that this really, they'd end up spending more than they wanted, and their note was going to be higher than she expected. And she has this old childhood terror of not having enough money and the fear of the money. Let's just dump the house, just sell it. And that was what was driving it for her. And to her credit, she was willing and able to say, you know, I think what's driving me here is money. And he said, okay, then we don't have a win-win-lose about the house. We have a win-lose of how do we deal with the house and take care of your fear about money and make sure that's not something that haunts you. And we start working toward a solution, see? So, if I'm making win-win sound easy, I'm doing you wrong. It's hard. But at least what I know now we're doing is solving a problem, not fighting. And that's what marriage is two people solving problems together, okay? One last little thought. An exception to this win-lose thing is what I call a loving win-lose. And that is, there are times when your heart can be so full of love that you're willing to take one for your spouse. And it's like they really want something and you don't. But if you reach inside and you feel like your heart is full of love for them, you're willing to give up this for them and say, you know what, I don't want this at all. I'm really willing to do it for you because I know it's important to you. And you choose to lose out of love. And that's where your marriage has reached a level of maturity and Christ-likeness, where you're sacrificing out of giving heart to one another. That's a beautiful thing. So win-win is not the only solution. The more full of love you get, the more you can become a loving win-lose. Now, you codependent pleasers in the group, you do not get to do this, okay? You need a good season of win-win, you mattering too, before you get to ride this ride. Because you've been doing that pathologically your whole life, all right? So close your ears, stop them up. You don't get to listen to that last part, okay?